Welcome to The Wayne Nicholson Show, where our guests share their fascinating stories. If you have any questions or would like to DM us, we would love to hear from you. We also have a YouTube channel and a Facebook page.
This episode is brought to you by Egypt Fun Tours. Now, I always said if Indiana Jones was to take a tour throughout Egypt, then Egypt Fun Tours would be the company he would book through. I can vouch personally, having booked this company when traveling to Egypt in 2019. If you are looking for a professionally guided service, which is knowledgeable, fun, and sometimes off the beaten track, then you can't beat Egypt Fun Tours. You see, my wife and I went with the private tour, which was personalized to our own interests and needs, which you can do with Egypt Fun Tours. We traveled from the south, visiting beautiful Abu Simbel, right up to the magical Alexandria. We got to spend alone time, would you believe, in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, as well as camping with the Bedouins in the White Desert. We learned how to read hieroglyphs, and we visited the beautiful temples of Abydos and Dendera, which sometimes is not included on tours. So for more information on Egypt Fun Tours, check out their Facebook page, Egypt Fun Tours, or their website, egyptfuntours.com. This episode is also brought to you by Delhi's Continental. From just one pop-up and one sandwich, their reputation spread quickly, selling out whatever they prepared in 20 minutes. Boasting their continental rolls are the best in Australia, with every ingredient fresh and made in-house. Now, within months, these two owners, Steb McCluda and Aldo Putsu, had already graced the pages of magazines, websites, and newspapers. Rumours are now stirring that this could be big. If you are interested in what all the fuss is about, and you are lucky enough to live in Perth, Western Australia, why not head down to Delhi's Continental, number 2/861 Beaufort Street, Inglewood, with their grand opening set to be this summer 2021. For more information, you can check out their Instagram and Facebook page, Delhi's Continental. Our guest today is Christy Nita Brown. She's a mother of two and about to release her first children's chapter book called Looking for Lily. I speak to Christy about all things writing, where she gets her concepts from, her schedule, finding manuscript editors, networking, publishing houses, self-publishing, distribution, all that really, really cool stuff. So if you've ever wanted to write that famous idea of yours, or you have a manuscript that's collecting dust in that drawer for the past 20 years, I think this is the podcast for you. Christy Brown. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So look, I'm really excited because writing, for those that know me, is my first love. It's my drug of choice, and I try and do it for my sanity whenever I can. And I've been lucky, I think. I've been lucky enough to make money as a writer, mm-hmm. As in getting funded. But they were screenplays, and I've always wanted to be a novelist.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was young, I wanted to be Stephen King, not Steven Spielberg.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first thing. And, you know, so whenever I can and I know somebody that's writing, mm-hmm. I just want to have a chat to them about stuff. So it's pretty exciting for you, because I remember when you first started this book, and you've now got your cover, and you've got this book done. Okay. And so I want to talk to you from the beginning concept of how you got the story, all the way through to maybe how you're going to distribute it.
Okay.
You know, it's also good for other writers out there to know about, you know, the self-publishing world, and just, you know, being a writer and being a mum of two kids.
Okay. So I'm going to be talking a lot.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So let's start from the beginning.
All right.
Looking for Lily.
Yes, Looking for Lily.
How did that eventuate?
Okay. So Looking for Lily was not what I wanted to write. I have an idea, a big idea, which I still don't feel I'm ready to write yet.
Right.
It's a middle grade book, which I feel like I'm not qualified
now,
to write.
Middle grade, tell me.
Okay, so I currently write chapter books. So chapter books is 6 to 10 years old, roundabouts, and then middle grade is above that. It's probably like 10, 11, 12, maybe through to 15, 16.
Right.
And then after that, you have young adult, and then you move into the adult world where you have all your different genres and things like that. Although young adult does have like fantasy and sci-fi, things like that.
Is Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, young adult?
Oh, well, Harry Potter's very interesting. So the first two books are PG as the films, as you would know.
Yeah.
So the first two books are kind of like an advanced reader chapter book, almost moving into middle grade. And the thing that she did that was so wonderful is that she then grew with her readers. So she started to move more into middle grade, up into young adult as her readers grew.
Sure.
So the last, I don't even know how many there are now. I think there's like seven. So the last four are like the M-rated films because yeah. they're just, you know, moving into that young adult.
So you're growing world. With the children, which is
That's
pretty
right,
cool.
which means you can make a lot of money.
But do you think she wouldn't have thought of that at the beginning?
Oh, see, I don't know. Writers often have this discussion about Harry Potter and, you know, apparently it's her first book and, you know, it was just this amazing thing that she produced out of thin air and, you know, I don't know. I just feel like after doing 5 years of writing courses, attending events, hanging out with writers, I just don't believe that the first and second Harry Potter just came out of thin air and, you know, I feel like she probably had some experience writing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she's incredible, really.
So she didn't write anything before that?
Well, I heard the rumor was when Harry Potter came out that she was living in her car, she was homeless, she had her children, and she was, you know, worked as a telemarketer and was writing it on the side or whatever in the cafes and stuff, which I can't believe because the writing is so incredible, you know, like it's amazing. There's so much detail and character development and they're just beautiful books. Like,
but probably the idea, do you think, was with her for many, many years?
Maybe. I get scared when I have ideas. I'm scared I'm going to lose them.
Do you write them down?
So I'd already have my daughter and she was about 6 months old and I got really tired of seeing my friends traveling the world on Facebook. And it started to get me really depressed in the middle of the night when I was breastfeeding and my husband was asleep next to me. So I thought, I can't do this anymore. So I turned to notes and I was like, I'm going to do something great. I'm going to write a book. So I used notes in my phone and I started typing out little ideas and then I'd email them to myself. And then while the baby slept, I'd put together a few things. So that's kind of how that came along. So I do write stuff down. I make notes in my phone.
That's fine. Yeah.
And then later, you know, like I've got Looking for Lily together, some kind of really scrappy, dirty draft. And I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing here. I need to do a course. I need to learn more about writing. If I'm really going to do this, I need to do it right. So that's where I stopped and I went and did a course for writing chapter books.
You did?
Yeah. I did the 6 to 9 year old chapter book course with the Australian Writers' Centre. It's an online course and I just, you know, I waited for a sale. So if you join their e-newsletter, you can get sales.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then when it came up for sale, I was like, yes, and I grabbed it and you get 1 year to do it. And it's
What's the rough cost on something like that?
I think I got it for about 40% off. So I think I paid about $130 for it, which is incredible.
That's very good.
But they're a little bit dearer now. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. So not too much. But
so it helped you?
Yeah, it gave me confidence. Like obviously a first draft is a piece of crap.
Yeah, that's what we all get told.
Yeah, it takes a long time, but at least I knew I was going in the right direction. And then it gave me some really clear, not too much. It didn't give me too much, but it gave me clear steps to progress forward to get to a point where I was happier with my finished draft that I could show somebody. And then that's when I started to like pay for script. Manuscript assessments or give it to friends to read and ask for their opinion, which is a whole nother world.
So how long, Christy, did it take you to do the first draft?
Oh, how long did it?
And how did you write it?
So I wrote Looking for Lily, the first draft. A majority of it was on my phone and emailing it to myself and then working on it during the day. I think it would probably take me, like right now I feel confident that I could knock out a chapter book in about 6 months. So I think Looking for Lily probably took about maybe a year to do a first draft. So with my writing, I get stuck at about 3/4 of the way and then I start going back and editing rather than finishing the book. So I spent a lot of time in that kind of world where I'm like, I'm just going to fix it a bit more before I decide what happens.
Yeah, that's a problem that I think all writers start with. And I never forget my writing lecturer said to me, don't get it right, get it written.
Yes, I know. I struggle.
Don't get it right, get it written. I used to tell all my students that because it does take discipline because you often go, oh, I can write that better. But when you learn that, like
I knocked out a feature screenplay in 3 weeks. And that's writing every day, 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. But I knew that 5% of it would be in the next draft.
Okay.
But knowing that it's going to be crap, knowing that 5%, it frees you up to not be too constrained and too self-critical, you know, criticize yourself in that way. So I literally just write things down. And a good technique someone said to me is, you know, when you get thoughts during writing, oh God, I've got to feed the kid and I've got to walk the dog, and to actually write that down on a new line.
Oh, really?
So it doesn't stop the flow from your creative brain to your, you know, to the page. If you keep that going, you'll get back into the story and it won't be a writer's block. And that really helps me.
Oh, wow. I have lots of post-it notes. So maybe I'm kind of doing what you're saying.
You probably are.
And as I'm working, I'm like, you know, don't forget the coffee. Don't forget the toilet paper.
and it's those things, you know, that sort of stop, that block, that pipeline.
Yeah.
And one guy said to me, just write that down, like go into a new line. Right, I've got to do shopping today and get that out and then go back to the story, because you're always going back to edit. And then it's the editing process that really gets going. But where did the concept of the sprites Looking for Lily? Tell my listeners
what it's about.
What it's about. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Looking for Lily, if you know me as a person, you know I'm a little bit of an environmentalist, sometimes an activist. You know, I'll go and hold up a sign here and there, sneak around. So Looking for Lily, I guess, in the back of my mind, I've always got a film that impacted me, because my background is film. Fern Gully's always stayed with me for a really long time.
Really?
Yeah, so Looking for Lily reminds me a lot of that. It also reminds me of a road movie that they, you know, they follow the water, which is like my highway, and they stop off and have adventures, which is like the diners and stuff. But Looking for Lily is about four sprites. Sprites are a little bit more sassier than a fairy. These guys, they play heavy metal. They have their own heavy metal band.
That's great.
And they live in a log, and they disrupt the old rainbow trout who live in the dam next to the log with their heavy metal, their guitars and their drumming and stuff, which they have, you know, little instruments made seeds and bits of wood and stuff. Yeah, so they have a heavy metal band and they have arguments with the rainbow trout. And that's kind of a secondary story. But the main part of the story is that these guys are displaced. So they used to live in a gum tree that you find out throughout the book that the gum tree got knocked down because of land clearing. And then when that happened, the magpies came and tried to eat them. So it's like this whole, I'm giving away the story. Maybe we should cut this out.
No. Yeah, so it's about these sprites that go on this adventure after their home gets knocked down.
That's right. Well, actually, we should go, you could cut this, can't you?
Yeah.
So
I won't though.
Oh, you won't? So their tree doesn't get knocked down. I should be very clear. So the sprite's tree doesn't get knocked down. Their tree stays, but every other tree gets knocked down. And so what that means is the birds in the area have nowhere to live. So they come to the sprite's tree. And then because there's no food left and nowhere to go, they start to attack the sprites.
Right.
They want to eat them. So
there's danger.
There is. Yeah. So the sprites have to run. So they run to this. One of them gets injured, and you'll see one of the characters has an eye patch. So one of them gets injured and they're, you know, running or flying, and they go to this dam and they find this log and they move in.
Nice.
And they keep to themselves, and they're, you know, dealing with anxiety and, you know, all the things that come along with just losing your house and being in danger. And they play heavy.
Quite relevant today.
Yeah, it is. And they play heavy metal to let their stress out. But then when they disrupt the old rainbow trout, they have arguments with them. So while this is all happening, Lily, the oldest of the sprite, who's getting quite independent, you know, she's coming into her teenage sprite years, she decides that she's going to go off and help another animal just after a storm, or just before a storm, And so she goes off and helps the animal, but she doesn't tell them where that she's gone. So in the morning when they wake up and she's not there, they think she's been taken. So they look around and they find a magpie feather, and they're like, oh my God, it's happening again. So they go on to this journey.
Don't give too much away, because people won't buy the book.
That's right. So they go on this journey into the apple orchard to find, or to save, Lily.
And so it's like a road trip adventure.
Yes, it is. It's a road trip adventure with
coming of age sort of.
Yeah, tiny little characters. Nice. You know, it's from the perspective of, you know, 2 inches tall with wings.
Yeah.
But I guess like, yeah, it's four characters. So there could be some relationship, I guess, to like Stand By Me or something like that.
I was, you know, I thought of Stand By Me. Yeah, these young kids coming of age, going off to find a dead body, but they learn about life and themselves and through this story, you know.
And because it's a chapter book, there's no dead bodies.
Yeah. So when you say chapter book, how does chapters define the name?
A chapter book is, it's like the first time a beginning reader will start to move into the world of novels.
Okay.
So a chapter book is the step after they get given readers at school by their kindy teacher or whatever. So my chapter book you would class as an advanced chapter book because it's 12,000 words.
Right.
Some of them can be 2,000 words, 4,000 words, 7,000 words. Mine's on the longer side. And usually they're a 16 font. So they're large writing,
sure.
They have lots of white space and they have pictures on every second or third page so that
the
young person can follow, like they're learning how to read and they're reading independently, but they need those cues to be able to follow the story, which means they're quite expensive to make because you need to pay an illustrator to draw all these
images. I was
going
to get to that, Now, when you write, do you have a full concept already made on scene cards and things, or are you more organic with your writing? And let's see what adventure happens today with these sprites.
Okay, so there's two types of writers, apparently. There's like a plotter and a panzer. Yeah, panzer, that's it. Yeah. I'm not even sure of the word because I'm probably not that one. So I come up with an idea and I start to think about my characters. So each character I work out, so they need a spot where they start and a spot where they finish, and they need to change so they can go happier or sadder, or, you know, happens.
Their arc.
Right, yeah. So I think about the characters first. The characters always come first for me. And then I start to think about setting, I guess, but it's usually a bit grey. That's kind of my area where I need to work on.
Sure.
I need to be clearer defining my settings earlier. And then I heard someone, actually AJ Betts last week, said that she works out a time period, which I've never even thought of. So she will put, you know, characters in a room for 48 hours and that's the time period of the book. So I don't actually do that, but I should do that more.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. Super interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I do think about the characters, think about their journey, think about the setting. And I start to get little post-it notes, I guess, and I'll like try and – I think about the hero's journey. You would know that from film. I think about, you know, what's in that first act, the second act and the third act and, you know, the original world and then how it changes.
Yeah.
And then I start to put up on my post-it notes, like this is the first act before the world changes and then – you know, so similar. My wardrobe's covered in post-it notes.
Yeah, it's very similar to film anyway.
Yes.
You're working within, you know, that time constraint, but you've got certain things that happen to keep the bums on seats.
That's right.
Yeah, your turning point and, you know, and the midpoint of the story. And that's interesting. So,
yeah, when you get better at writing, which I'm not there yet, I'm very green. But when you get better at writing, then you can start to mess around with that. Like,
okay.
Yeah, you don't have, like, nobody has to write that way.
That's true.
But that's how I would write. And then when I get better at it, I'll go, oh, well, I can just not do this part, or I could flip it on its head.
Turn it upside down a little bit too. But then again, I suppose it depends on your audience.
That's right. Chapter books really follow a structure.
That's right. Because they're young.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to honor. Like you have to honor what the child is going through and where they're at. So I wouldn't write a chapter book if I wanted to write something personal to me. Like it would probably be middle grade or young adult. But for me, like with my education background, being like an old primary school teacher from years ago and now having young children, I see how important it is to learn how to read. So I want to write books where I can help them to do that, but also I want to write content that's cheeky and sassy and you know, funky, and they're going on these trips, because a lot of the early early readers or the chapter books, some of them are a bit boring.
And you've read obviously quite a bit.
I read all the time.
Yeah,
I think
I was gonna say.
Stephen King said that in his book on writing.
It's one of the best books on writing, I think.
It's the first one that everyone goes to, and it's so good because it basically says just write. Read and write. So, and you can't.
There's a few I want to tell you about that really stick out for me. One's Bird by Bird, I think it's called. Yeah, I've got to get that right. I'll put it up on the screen. But that really helped me. It's a small book.
Okay.
But yeah, on writing, I remember I was in Thailand and I got my teeth done. And I was in this room and my head, my cheeks were swollen and I couldn't eat anything, couldn't drink anything. And I'm locked in this room and I literally had Stephen King's on writing.
Mm.
And within 4 days, I read that book twice.
Oh, wow.
Because literally I had nothing else to do. And I took notes and I thought, God, this is fantastic.
Mm.
Do you think being a mother
mm.
really helped you within that journey? Or do you think someone like me could pick up a chapter book and sort of still hit the nail on the head?
Mm.
Or it's a bit harder for someone like me?
I think there's pros and cons to both. I have a friend, Nat Amor, who's an amazing writer and is so successful at the moment. She's on to her fourth or fifth book and she doesn't have children, but she writes the most crazy, like fun, amazing stuff. So I don't think you have to have kids to be a children's book or a junior fiction middle grade author.
Mm.
That's definitely not a thing I think you need. Having said that, on the flip side of that, having kids for me helps a lot because it reminds me when I'm reading to my daughter or she's reading to me, it reminds me how important chapter books are and how I need to get it right for them, sure. not for me.
Sure.
So my daughter's only 7. She's only just getting into chapter books now. And so later she'll start reaching middle grade, probably when I'm ready to start writing middle grade, which will give me kind of like a little bit of an insight of you.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I'll be able to see, you know, what words she struggles with and what stories she likes and, you know, what excites her. So I think that will, it's almost like my kids are my research.
Yeah, which is great. You know, I think it's great. And do you think stories have changed when it comes to chapter books over the last 20, 50 years?
Oh, definitely. My daughter also sends home some bad readers from, you know, maybe the 1980s, 1990s. And like, I remember sitting with her and reading one about a couple that gets married in a church. And it was just like a male and a female getting married in a church and wearing the white dress. And it was just like, I'm like, why are they sending this book home?
Yeah,
it's not like this anymore. And my daughter actually said to me, Mum, what's a church? I was like, oh, terrible mom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a big difference. And right now, like Australia has some really amazing writers who are doing really cutting edge stuff. And every year I do the Kid Lit Vic conference where you pitch to publishers. And I'm hearing that on the world stage, Australian writers are recognized.
Right?
Yeah, that we actually have some really, really highly talented people in this country doing amazing stuff, like so different.
So, go back to what you just said. What's this conference? Sounds interesting.
Oh, Kid Lit Vic?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Melbourne. So we don't have one in Perth that I'm aware of like Kid Lit Vic. I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm a member of Squibby here in WA, which also does like the writer's retreat. So we will get, you know, publishers we can pitch to through Squibby, S-C-W-B-I.
You posted a photo recently of you and some girls.
Yes, that was in Book Week. So Read, I think it's a new event. It's called Read Local. Oh, I feel terrible because we received a grant to put on an event and I can't remember the title, but it's through Writing WA, Read Local Week. We like to read local.
Sure.
Yeah, and the copyright agency is involved as well. Thanks, guys. They gave us some money so that we could have Kate McCaffrey talk to us. And then there was actually about...
I saw.
Yeah, 9 events in Perth. That's how I saw AJ Betts speak, who was amazing, very honest and open, lovely.
So if someone wants to find out what is happening, because,
yes.
you know, I get asked and I don't know,
mm-hmm.
where can they go to find out what events are coming up? And
yep.
is there a, like a, I know in, we had a writer's guild.
Yep.
With screenplays. What is it in?
Yep. So WA, even probably Australia, we have really, I think, supportive writing people, authors and communities. So I think that the best way is just to get involved. So Squibby's the first place you
Squibby.
Would go. Yeah. Society of Writers. I only know that.
I'll look up the acronym
okay, great,
and I'll put it on the screen.
Yeah. So SCWBI. So I'm in the West Australian chapter. So there's all different chapters around the world. So you become a member of Squibby and then you can find out what's going on in your area. I've also signed up to an e-newsletter called Buzz Week, I think it's called. I'll let you know what it's called if that's wrong. And it's $45 for the year. And the ladies who run that are really switched on. So they're probably members for all the writing organisations around Australia and collect
sure.
all their news and competitions and then collate it.
Sure.
So that's a really good e-newsletter for Perth people.
Okay.
Yep.
And has that really helped you?
Yeah, like, totally.
Like networking with other writers. When you write, do you surround yourself with other writers and interact with them, get feedback from chapters and things like that? Or are you a writer that has to write on your own, be in your own time, get everything sort of on the paper and then start getting feedback?
Mm.
I'm more of that person.
Yeah.
Because I remember we did like a – we did like a writer's group thing.
Yes, we chatted about books and what we wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, like when I've been writing more with screenplays, I have to really lock myself away, get into my own head, not get too influenced by other people's ideas, not yet. I've got to get my stuff down. And then once it's down, I've got probably the third draft. I then start going, okay, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think? If the third draft, it's probably like the seventh, you know.
Yeah.
How are you with that?
Well, you could go either way with that. So I'm getting better at hanging out with people and networking and going to events. I think that today it's really difficult to make money in any kind of arts area.
Yeah.
So you really need to make connections to be able to promote yourself. Social media is still important, even though, you know, a lot of us don't like it.
And it is, isn't it?
Yeah, and being able to talk, like even just now chatting and talking. So I think that networking and getting in with a good crew of writers helps you with that constantly.
Sure.
But you have to find the right people. And probably I think that you would need to have some ideas written. So for me, I had already written Looking for Lily before I even spoke to anybody. And then I actually went down the paid angle and I went to professionals. Like, I always want the best. So I Googled like the best script, manuscript assessors.
Right.
And then I paid a lot of money for them to read it and give me advice. And then afterwards, when I started talking to people in the writing community, they're like, oh, we don't do that. We just share and help each other.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, damn it, I could save some money.
they're not cheap.
No, I know. They can range from like $200 to $500. But yeah, it's just crazy. But if you find someone that is free, or you can buy wine or give them chocolate, and they have valuable things to say about your work that you can actually learn from and develop, then that's gold.
I had a fantastic script editor.
Okay.
Yeah. And I totally worth the money. Like, I'd give her, say, 95 pages of work. She'd give me 60 pages of notes back. Every one of those notes just made sense. So, but it did take me a while to go through a few script assessors. That, you know, some of them just wasn't, we weren't gelling in story-wise, you know, like they had different value systems to what I was putting in the story.
Yep.
But I did, when I did find this woman, and she wasn't here, she's in the States, she was just fantastic. But I didn't know what the process is with books.
Yes.
So it's just.
Well, you can do that, or you can do courses. So another way to get writing is to do a course that directly relates to like what you want to write.
No,
so,
I'm talking about feedback from your writing.
Oh, yeah. So with the courses, you also get feedback as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the courses that I did at the end of the course, the very last thing you do is you had to write 500 words on a scenario, you submit it to that author. That author would then record themselves reading it loud and then provide you with feedback.
Oh, that's good.
Which is so great. Like, I had Tim Harris, who's incredible. I had him read my 500 words, which I'm now turning into like a little chapter book series. And he was like, I'm going to steal some of this. It's so good.
That must be nice to hear that.
Yeah, right? It was super nice. Like, it's probably bull, but it's super nice. I was going to tell you something about working with editors. So what we were chatting about with people reading your work and giving you advice, when I went through the editing process with Looking for Lily, I ended up working with three different editors over the 5 years it took to finish that book. And the difference between editors is crazy. Like, some editors are like really pedantic or really serious about finding every single error, and then other editors are like, oh, here's an error here, so you just look through the rest of it and see if you can find more of them.
So broader brush strokes.
Yeah. And then also some of them will write amazing comments, like they'll actually say, this should be this and this is the reason why, and if you click on this link, here's a resource about how to do that. And I'm like, incredible. Like, these people are gold, because they're actually helping you grow while you're editing. And then others are just like, oh, it's okay. So editing is an amazing way to learn about writing and to improve your skills.
What's your sort of schedule in writing? Now, are you a daytime writer or a nighttime? Because before I remember you saying when you put the baby down, that's when you'd write. Is that still...
Oh, it's so different for people. Like I hear people talk about their boost times, their best times.
Yeah.
And so for me, the morning is the best, which is impossible to get. So my brain really fires until that first midday coffee or whatever, or second coffee actually. So that section between, you know, you're getting up, the kids are gone to school until like lunchtime, bam, I'm riding like a crazy woman. And then it dies. And this, the second half of the day is terrible. And you can spend like 2 hours on one sentence and it still won't work. And then I get to about 8 or 9 o'clock when my husband wants to jump on Netflix and watch something really cool. And my brain starts going, oh, I've got an idea for a book. And I'm like, oh, here we go. So I'm like trying to keep him happy and type on my phone and
be the wife.
That's right.
And so be the writer.
I know. If I didn't have a job and I didn't have, you know, two kids, my best times would be morning and later at night.
Sure.
But I've heard, like, I don't know if you know this, but Jay Kristoff, who is like a huge science fiction author who's just been going great guns.
You've talked to me about him before.
Yeah, because I actually went to uni with his sister.
That's
and he's
right.
from Perth. But he doesn't really mention that because he lives in Melbourne. But we know he's from Perth. Anyway, so I was told that he, I think it was him that writes at night and goes to the gym really late. So it just depends on, I could be totally wrong, and he might write, probably not, but maybe he might go, you're totally wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's people that really spark like late at night.
Me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On my writing schedule, do you know what my writing schedule
is? No.
11 till 7.
Oh my God, that's insane.
It's when the muses come out for me, you know, and my brain would click in and literally I'd have like all these ideas like funneling through that I just have to write.
Oh, my God.
But that 11 till 7 would seem like an hour.
Yeah, okay.
Go to bed and I'd get up in the afternoon, cook dinner and get ready for the nighttime. And then my wife would go to bed and then I'd watch a bit of TV and then suddenly 11 o'clock comes and
it's like I'd working in a nightclub.
Yeah, but do you know, there's just something magical about nights. It you feel like you're the
if
only
if you're dancing.
Well, you feel like you're the only person alive. You know, it's there's stars are out. It's just magical.
Yeah,
you know?
I suppose.
But you know, I do have to say that it was a 1 year writing gig I had, so I had to submit a draft every 3 months. That got a bit of pressure on, but I was like a zombie at the end of that year, and I thought to myself, if I'm going to write from now on, I really have to change that.
Yeah.
Like I would love to get up at like 6 in the morning and start writing till midday, and I wish I could be one of, and I'm sure I can be. I've just got to retrain my mind, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen soon. I'm going to have to figure out exactly what time, but we do have a life. Like I'm married, you're married, you've got kids.
I know, I'm completely sleep deprived. So like there's no way I can work at night. I'd be like, ugh. Yeah. I'm like trying to hold back the tears of how sleep deprived I am right now.
So 5 years on and off, right, Christy?
Well, yes, 5 years on and off. People say, how many drafts did you do? But you probably don't know this about me. I literally did not pick up a novel pretty much from year 10 on. Like I sat my TEE, that's how old I am. I sat my TEE, English Lit, having read the blurbs on the back of the books. So I completely failed. And then I went in, you know, I moved into state and did all these crazy things, went traveling around the world, never picked up a book, ever. And then it was only after, I think some, like Harry Potter was probably the only thing I read. And then one of my friends in Sydney gave me like a detective book and I was like, oh, okay, novels. And then starting to have children, starting to buy picture books, things like that, it all starts to seep
in. Sure.
And then it comes back around. But I've always done jobs that involved writing. So like my background in film and TV, in Sydney I worked in, you know, music. So I had the marketing, such a big part of it, always writing, thinking about target demos, sales, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then here in Perth, working as a lecturer, writing, you know, all of our activities and tasks and then going into curriculum development.
I do remember you being quite strategic when I first started to talk to you about books.
Yes, and I have like, a marketing mind.
You did. Well, you had a strategy, which was things I'd never thought about.
Mm-hmm. I do too with looking for
audiences and you'd go through the bookstores and look at the picture covers and figure out what that. And I thought, okay, that's something I need to click into a little bit more. But you know, I'm just too scared to venture into. I might have to start at a chapter book. It's a different art form, you know, because you're writing people's thoughts.
Yes, and it's different from film.
It's totally different.
Like the dialogue is different. Like the bits in between, like when we write scripts, we have like really strong dialogue and we have, you know, directions on what's going to happen in the scene. Like they're going to turn this way, they're going to do that, this is going to happen. Books are so different. It's like the bits in between the dialogue is where I have my problems, like trying to work out past and present tense and then like all this kind of stuff people probably take for granted. But because I think visually from film and television, now I've got to put in all these bits around the dialogue and I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And there's, you know, I looked up this proverb the other day and it made so much sense. I used to teach in acting, you would say to the actors that the power is in between the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most powerful moments is what you don't say. Mm. And then there was this Arabic proverb that said, don't speak unless your words hold more power than your silence.
Mm-hmm.
Show, don't tell, you know.
That's right.
Like if they're frustrated, show that the characters are frustrated. Like write, you know,
I know,
what
but
they're
you have
doing.
To have the describing words. So in film and TV, you can just put, you know, he's a bit pissed off, make him look like he's pissed off. But in writing, you have to go, okay, what does somebody look like that's pissed off? Do they burrow their frown?
Yeah.
Is that even right? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, do they cross their arms and, you know, and you have to put that into the book because you can't say he was angry.
That's right.
It's really
difficult. That's right. It's a very result. Yeah, but how exciting is it though?
Yeah.
And I think your skills will get better. Now you know why people write so many books.
Yes, it's gotten heaps better. I cranked out like 2,000 words the other day and I was like, wow, this is really good. It's polished. Like,
are you still writing on your phone?
No.
changed.
Yeah, it's starting to change. The baby's sleeping.
Oh, you're getting professional now.
Yeah, so I'm on a Mac. But it's a big one because my eyes are blurry.
Yeah, I've got to get a big one too. Yeah. I've been on a laptop for years.
Yeah.
And
no
I'm
good.
Like, oh,
no good.
I need an iMac. I need one of the big screens that I can look at. Even for editing, like I'm editing an hour of show every week. And after a while, I'm just like, oh, my eyes just need a rest. And at my age, I'm starting to go, oh, I think I might need glasses soon.
Yeah, same. I'm pretty sure I do.
Yeah. Can you see me?
Yes, I can.
Can you imagine you and I pretending we can't see the, we can't see shit? It's just like these blurred faces. That would take away the nerves, though, for
it's
you.
It's really scary when the baby's like sick, and I'm like, okay, we need some Panadol. And I pick up the bottle, and I'm like, how many meals? I'm like, I'm trying to tiny little letters. I'm like, I think I need glasses.
But they are fucking small. On
oh
those
my
bottles.
God,
who
it's
can
so
read
dangerous.
That?
No wonder kids are ODing. They're like,
no. You're saying at night, my wife and I are there with under lights, going, what does that say?
Yeah,
what does that say? So, once you finished, it took you 5 years.
Yes.
You went through script.
So I did two, they're called manuscript assessments.
Manuscript
in writing.
Assessments.
Yeah, so I did two of those. I did one with Deb Fitzpatrick, who's quite a well-known middle grade author from Perth. And I did one with Sue Whiting, which she is, I think she's Brizzy based. And she, I picked her because she used to work in publishing houses for like 20 years.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and they gave me different things at different points in time. Like Deb told me, so I had only, you know, it was 1 year that I took. So I just finished my first draft, and that's not when you pay for a manuscript assessment, but I did. And she said, you know, you're a writer, you finished it, well done. And that's exactly what I needed at that time. And then a couple of years later, Sue Whiting looked at it and she was like, oh, this is terrible. You've got so many problems with your story. What are these characters doing? Nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
And she like totally tore it apart. And I was like,
which is
perfect.
Great. That's what you want.
I was like, finally, yes, I was going to tear it apart. So then I fixed it all. And then in that time, I connected with my old friend, Nat Amore, who said, I'll read it for you, which is incredible. And then she rang me and spoke to me for like 3 hours for free.
Wow.
So whenever she comes to Perth, she has somewhere to stay and a whole bunch of wine to drink.
Yeah, of course.
And then my friend Katie Lefroy, who writes under Catherine Lefroy, she read it as well and sat with her partner and they discussed it for 8 hours and gave me all of this feedback.
See, that's the best.
That's gold, man. Yeah. And so those guys really pushed me and they just took it in another direction, made more sense.
Gave you other perspectives too on those characters.
Yeah. And then I had a whole bunch of young people read it. So throughout the 5 years, I was always giving it to the target demographic. I was bribing people at my daughter's school. I was like, I'll give you $5 if you read this. And they were like, totally. And then they read it and they come back and tell me what they thought.
Oh, that's
and
so
I
good.
Do little questionnaires and I got them to draw pictures of what they thought the characters looked like. So that was all research and, you know, doing that as I'm getting to this point. Then it got to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm really happy with it. Now I'm going to start this process. Am I going to pitch it or am I going to self-publish? And I was like, I'm going to pitch it. So I pitched it to some publishing companies. And
that's at these events that you're talking
about?
Well,
some of them were events and then some I just sent. So anybody can send if they have, like, it's on the contacts page for a publisher and it will say whether they're open and what they're accepting. And you have to follow all their instructions. It's called the slush pile.
Okay.
So I was doing a couple of slush piles and I was, you know, targeting some publishers. In my heart and in my mind, I had always written Looking for Lily for Scholastic. That was the publisher I wanted to take, but they don't have a slush pile. So I had no way of ever getting this book in front of Scholastic because I needed an agent and agents do not look at people. So I pitched it to some publishers and I got some great feedback and, you know, ways to change it, but nobody would take it because it wasn't really their thing or, you know, maybe they had something coming out at the same time. Or maybe it was just shit, you know?
You don't know.
Yeah, they were just like, it didn't fit for them. Anyway, so I was like, okay, so I'm going to go indie. And I had been listening to the Joanna Penn podcasts for the past 5 years. And she is an independent author based in Bath in England who is incredible. Her podcasts are incredible. I hope she never quits. Every week she has people on that are doing stuff in the indie space. And there's marketing, there's, you know, building websites, there's character development, there's NFTs. Like she just does everything.
Great.
All about writing. So that really influenced me. And with my background from music industry, having worked for major labels, I also had my own kind of independent record label. I come from that world. I know how to market. I know how to promote. I know how to make a product. Like I've made 3 vinyl of my own in my life. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Well, not my music, but the people I manage.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So I thought, well,
It's another product.
Yeah, I can't get it in front of Scholastic, I'm just going to do it myself. Mm. So that's what I did. And I decided that I was going to release it independently. I started to look at editors in WA and around the world. I even used a lady in America who was amazing. So just talking to people, asking who their editors were, or even Joanna Penn has a whole bunch of resources on her page.
Sure.
Stealing some of that, contacting them, finding out their rates. And then, you know, editing is a process within itself. There's 3 different types of edits. And I think I did like 6, especially like last week I had to do another proofread of the final book. So I actually submitted the PDF files to my editor and then she went through with a little sticky note and told me the last errors before it went to print.
Right.
So yes, so the editing process and people giving you feedback and deciding what to take and what not to take, because in the end the editor will say to you, these are the errors I've picked up, but you can choose whether or not you listen to them. So it's like whether or not you decide, do I want to go down that line with making that change.
Yeah.
So depending on what edit stage you're at. And then of course I had to deal with an illustrator, you know? So I had to find an illustrator who would work independently. I needed to look at their art and make sure they were suitable. I wanted somebody that could really, you know, draw kick-ass fairies basically, but not the Tinkerbell stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But these guys have got attitude, you know? They play instruments.
Was it hard to find an artist?
I looked at all the books that I love because I buy so many books and I like
to. Did they have to be from WA or could they be anywhere?
They could have been anywhere, but it's funny, you know, because I did everything in WA. So my last editor is from WA. She works for Fremantle Press. My illustrator had also done some work from Fremantle Press and she lives just down the road.
Oh, wow.
And then I found a printer who prints on an offset printer 5 minutes away from my house and his quotes were coming in about the same price as Sydney, Melbourne for just the laser digital stuff. And I was just like, oh my God. And he also did ethically sourced paper. He could number it back to, you know, the forest that the tree had been taken from.
That aligns with your values too.
I was just like, this is amazing. I'm making a pure WA product that's based in WA. So the story is based in the Great Southern region. It's, you know, hush, hush, it's Donnybrook.
Sure.
So yeah, so for me, I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. So now I have this book that's just with the printers now. I've just looked at the sample print, got a few little errors that I'm trying to fix.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go to print. I'm running 500 copies. They're going to be signed and they're going to be numbered. It's the first edition, small print run. And I've already sold just under 100 on pre-order.
No way.
Yeah, and also I've done a distribution deal with John Reed Books in New South Wales. So I'm a member of the ASA, and so that's the Australian Society of Authors, and they have a deal with John Reed where you can just pay an admin fee and they'll distribute anybody's books that are independent. They will take them to all the bookstores around Australia.
Really?
Yes, but I'm not sure. I'm waiting to see what happens. They're only requesting a small number. And then I also sell through my website, which is amazing because, you know, I make more profit because it's on my website.
I've heard that.
Yeah, the only fee I have to pay is for Stripe. So I've used Stripe. Now, if anybody asks, you've got PayPal and Stripe, but if you do your research, nobody's using PayPal anymore. Sorry, PayPal.
I used to use Stripe for when I had a clothing line.
Everybody's into Stripe, and you've got to test this stuff yourself. And I tested it when I set it up, and it's so quick. Like, it's literally doot-doot-doot, and I've bought my book. So, yeah, it's all happening.
What about shipping?
Shipping, okay. So this is a bit scary. I think I might have stuffed up on the shipping. So I had some advice that I could probably slip my book into one of those prepaid envelopes and sneak it through the system and it looks more like, you know, a document because it is quite – it's not that thick. So I'm hoping they're about $2.70 to $3, and that's what I've charged. So I'm doing delivery by my car in WA. Like, I'm not talking about going to Karratha or Broome, but I'm going to deliver locally to everyone buys it, so it saves all the postage.
And it's nice to meet your customer your readers.
Yeah. And then anybody that's interstate, I'm just, you know, got my fingers crossed that $3 covers it. And if it doesn't, then that's okay. I'll eat into my profit.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's like we had to put prices on shipping, and we're talking like they would order. We'd see the internet and we're like, where are they from? Belgium. Okay. Now, where's that? Okay. How much is shipping? And we'd have to go by that.
Yeah.
Oh, we're so – and because we had to – that was the big thing for us, is because we were working both in two different industries, and it was hard to go on holiday because one would have to look after the packaging. You know, we had packaging and going to the post office. Oh my God, you don't think about stuff like that, you know. But I was going to – that's what I was going to ask you about, the shipping.
I know.
So it sounds very similar. It sounds similar. What about e-books?
E-books. Okay, cool. So e-books, because it's children – it's probably not going to sell many.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, because they're books, 6 to 10, it's going to be physical. And then I have had a lady approach me, a really cool chick. She works with audiobooks. So audiobooks may be growing.
Audiobooks are good.
Yeah, it could work for kids.
No, Chrissy, you can put in sound, like sound scores effects. And the water.
I should
and the
pay
wind
you to do
and,
mine.
And, you know, like some of the books I've, because I listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Okay.
But for kids, you've got that extra dimension that you can bring in. Like, you've got voices. Like, what do your characters sound like? That'd be cool.
That's scary.
You get kid actors in, and then you get the wilderness and, you know, the sound score. That could be really cool.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about all that stuff at the moment. The good thing about releasing independently is that I can take my time. So when you work for a publisher, you have like a release date. I have a release date, but they literally throw everything at it. And if you don't sell your books within the first 3 months, you kind of cut from the roster and that's it. It's the same with music as well.
And movies.
Yeah, and film. But when you're an independent author, you can release and you can just do your pushes as you go because you're in charge.
Sure.
So you can set your timelines. So for me, I'd really like to have an audiobook probably by Christmas, and then I can push it. And I'd really like to, if the distribution deal doesn't work out, then I might go and do consignment. So I've done that before where I've walked into stores, had a chat to them. Generally bookstores will take X amount and they'll take a cut. So I'm more than happy to drive around Perth and if there's any leftovers, do that.
There's a place I can put you to that has done audiobooks before.
Oh, great.
A friend of mine works there.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. No, but that sounds so cool.
The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to target schools. So I'm going to write to librarians the primary schools and let them know about my work. I'm going to send them sample chapters and cover art and just explain what it is. And if they'd like me to come to the school and do a presentation, I'm, you know, a teacher, trained teacher with a working with children tech.
See how it all comes back.
I know it does. Back to education. So I can offer to like come in and do sessions on creative writing and things like that. And then I thought I could hit up all the libraries around Australia, like public libraries, and just let them know about my product. But yeah, it's just a small
journey though, hey?
Yeah.
I mean, how much easier would it be the second book once you've got the process that you've done with this first book, Looking for Lily? Right from not just writing, but who to go see, what to do, printers,
illustrators. How to save money.
Yeah, how to save money
and
in
not
that way.
Spend so much on things that you don't need. That's one thing I haven't mentioned, the money side of it. And like the talk I went to last week with AJ Betts, she was very open and honest about finances. It's quite difficult as a writer to make money. So
it's very difficult.
Yeah. And you have to be really massive and you're like the 5% to be able to like afford to buy a house. So it's really tough. So the money that I've spent, I had a donor give me $5,000, which was amazing.
Really?
Yes. And so this
an
person,
admirer.
Yeah, believed in me so much. He was just like, here, take $5,000. I think it's gonna work. So I was like, okay, but my bills are a lot higher than $5,000. Yeah. And just yesterday I worked out how much money I would make if I sold all 500 coffees, and it's like negative $300.
After expenses and everything.
And that's not including my 5 years of time.
Yeah.
That's just what I paid for.
You know, but then again, Christy, right, you could have a magical hit on your hand. And I think that's what every writer hopes. Like I had Sally Carbon on, who's a author of, I think she's done more than 5-6 books. Ex-Olympian, writes sort of adult erotica. And she was saying how much money she saves self-publishing, also what the percentage of profits are that she takes home as opposed to a publisher and publishing your book. I think people can do it now. You know, you've got things like you can do this for advertising. You've got the internet. You've got social media. And I think after you streamline after a while, who knows? Your second book or Looking for Lily could be one of these magic little hits that take off. And I think every writer has that on the back of their mind. I call it the creative curse.
Yeah.
The curse is you love doing it.
No, I love writing.
Yeah. But I don't think there's a better living, lifestyle that you can have.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's good to have something to fall back on though. I think you need to have a job. There needs to be some kind of part-time thing that's
any
supporting
creative,
you.
Any creative.
Especially now
venture.
With government's slashing funding.
I know.
But yeah, I'm just happy. Like, honestly, I'm happy just to, like, I've got a mailing list, which you can sign up to on my website. And I have like an organic, like it's actually an organic group of people that I talk to regularly and I send them little videos of what I'm up to and stuff. And just growing that list slowly. And so, you know, like I've got a really high rate of buyers off that list. So like maybe sitting at about probably 60% of my list have like pre-ordered my book.
Wow.
Yeah. And so as that grows and I talk to people more, you'd want to double that by the next release or, you know, one and a half.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so, yeah. And if you have a look at my Instagram, my numbers are low, but everybody who I follow and everyone that follows me are real people.
Yeah,
and
that's
I'm not
right.
paying for that
that's
stuff.
Right.
And we talk to each other and we've got chats going and we've got little book clubs. And so that's really important.
It's not how many followers you have. It's those quality followers
that
you know, interact with you. All my listeners, I shouldn't say all, most of my listeners come from Instagram stories and I hashtag, you know, what the subject matter is going to be about. So for us, it will be first novelist, you know, a novelist first book and Looking for Lily at a chapter book. And you hide those hashtags in the background. So I always make my hashtags the same color as the background is white. So you can't see them.
Oh, wow. You'll have to show me. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden, and plus I can attach Spotify directly to Instagram stories.
Okay.
So that's been a massive thing. And like, video, no one watches, not many people watch the podcast. However, a friend of mine turned around and said, Wayne, your first 100,000 is always the hardest. But when you got 100,000 followers, those 100,000 will tell, if they tell one person, and you got now 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got 500,000 people,
yep.
So he said that it took him 3.5 years to get to, you know, 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's shooting a video every day.
Whoa.
But it took him another 6 months to get another 100,000.
Yeah, okay, because they were just passing it on.
And then it took 3 months to get to another. So suddenly he's got 750,000 people looking at his stuff.
Mm.
And that's where, so you're looking at it in that way.
Mm.
But for me, you've got to try everything.
Mm-hmm.
Start a YouTube channel for your books.
Mm.
Start talking to your audience a bit more because that could become your income.
That's right.
That can support the writing of the book.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are doing that now.
I'd love to do a cross-pollination. Like I've been reading about how you can swap, you know, like you can talk to somebody else's list and they'll talk to your list.
Yeah.
And you do the problem with writers is a lot of them are signed to publishing houses and they don't,
can't.
They haven't got any data. So once that deal's done, they don't have email addresses. They don't have names.
But you got to talk to somebody that's coming up like you are.
Yeah, like an indie. Yeah. So if there's any indies out there, want to do a trade.
Yeah.
You've got organic followers, not the ones that you buy. Yeah.
I don't think you can buy them anymore, yeah?
Well, I have people contacting me like every week saying, yeah, and I've had people contact me wanting to do a paid review of my book. And I'm like, oh, no. Mm. Especially because like there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah, there is.
You're paying for somebody to say something nice.
Yeah,
I would much rather people to be honest. And, you know, like actually I love it when people tear me apart because I grow and I learn and I get better.
Yeah.
And I'm not scared because this is my first book. It's probably going to be not the best.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. So. And I mean, the more people that tear you apart, the better it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I get people criticizing. It's funny, the more controversial the podcast, the more viewers or listeners I have.
So you need people to tear you apart.
Podcast 6.
He's a terrible
person. It's sixth podcast. We spoke about religion. Oh, my God. I'm still getting comments on it
wow.
now. But it
I thought it would be the ghosts for sure.
No, it shot up like 6,500 with that one podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, you know, like.
Wow.
It's just, but it's the. There's so many people soon realize it's not about me as the host or you. It's about the subject matter and the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really nice in that way. So if people wanted to check your website
yes.
or do you said you've got a website?
Yes, I do.
So where can they contact you?
Yes, so it's kristinitabrown.com. So KRISTYNITA Brown.
I'll put those in the show notes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's kristinitabrown.com and on my website I have a VIP mailing list. And people can join. I think it's the last tab along. You just click and join. And I'm also just getting into Instagram. It's funny, you know, because like in the industry I used to work in music, I was probably one of the first people to get onto Facebook.
Right.
Because we needed to learn it for our bands that we were promoting.
Mm.
So not long after it dropped, I was on it poking people and being a pirate and stuff. But I'm so slow with social media now. Since I don't work in that industry anymore, I'm like totally rejecting it. Can't stand it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been on Instagram not for very long, only maybe less than a year. Don't know what I'm doing, so you can give me some tips. But yes, Instagram is where I'm at now and my website.
Fantastic. And so nice to talk to you. And look, let's call you back in 6 months and we'll talk about
how
things have happened once the audiobook's done.
Great.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
See ya.